Now, I wouldn't say the United States needs to go on an apology tour. What I'm trying to say is the United States needs to establish itself as a real beacon on the hill that is only interested in friendly relations and trade with other countries. And so it's a non-entanglement. This goes back to the original founding fathers' vision for this country.
Everyone watching and listening, welcome to another episode of Unrestricted. I'm your host, Veronika Kirilenko. Today, I'm honored to speak with Dr. Michael Rechtenwald, a former professor at New York University and an avowed Marxist, author of 12 books, public speaker, and presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. Dr. Rechtenwald, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I just want to correct one thing. I am no longer an avowed Marxist. I was once an avowed Marxist.
Once. Yeah. You're not a Marxist, just to clarify that.
Not at all. No, I'm a very virulent anti-communist.
Fantastic. Well, this is great. But doctor, you're now running to be a president of the United States of America. Yesterday, you updated your followers on the hardships that you've been facing lately as a candidate. You're publishers severed ties with you. My Mrs. Institute had to suspend your popular podcast. Your fellowship with them cannot be held any longer. Yet you persist in wrecking the regime. Why such determination?
What's behind it is that the campaign is just too important. We have an immense task ahead of us, that is to educate people on liberty and the importance of liberty, and to promote this decentralized revolution that we're promoting, and that is a localization movement, and to stand firmly on the issues of war interventionism and things of this nature that have to be addressed, and that no candidate in these other parties are adequately addressing at all, not from a principled standpoint anyway.
Yes, of course. And, you know, the transformation in your political worldview is really fascinating. Would you provide a brief overlook of the transformation of a Marxist professor from New York into a hardcore libertarian with presidential aspirations?
Yes, sure. That story I've told many times, but I can briefly recap it here. I was, you know, a professor at NYU, I was an avowed Marxist at the time, but I became very disturbed by a lot of what was going on there in terms of censorship and no platforming of speakers and the bias reporting hotline on campus and a whole number of things that looked very, very, very very much like they bore the signs of a totalitarian regime right in the university system. And I started to speak up against this, and I got interviewed in the student newspaper, and all hell broke loose there. And I was immediately coerced into a leave of absence and condemned by the diversity, equity, and inclusion group. And they tried to savage my academic career, and they tried to silence me, and I would not be silenced. So eventually I sued NYU because and five professors, because they sent out all these defamatory and libelous emails about me. And they moved my office to the Russian department. They basically put me in my own personal gulag, and then I had a proposed speaker come to campus to speak in one of my classes to 14 students, and NYU was in a real hysterical mode. They wanted to stop it, but they couldn't because of my academic freedom, so-called. So somehow they got the mayor of New York City to cancel my class. The mayor of New York City canceled one of my classes to 14 students. And then after that, I realized that, you know, I had, they had filed a motion to dismiss the case, and our lawyers couldn't really overcome it. But after that, I realized that they would probably come back to the negotiating table. I wanted out of there, but I wanted out of there with something. And so I got a small settlement and left. And in that interim, I converted immediately to a civil libertarian because I realized that individual rights were of paramount importance. And then I renounced the whole left, inclusive of Marxists and Marxism, all at once. And then I went into a journey of political and economic historical exploration, in which I started to examine the history of political leftist political criminality, inclusive of the Soviet Union and China and other areas. And then I started a deep dive into economics and critiques of socialist economics, beginning with Ludwig von Mises and continuing through Murray Rothbard and then into Hans Hermann Hoppe. This was the Austrian school of economics, which is what I espouse now. And I quickly became an economic political libertarian as well. And so I've been speaking and writing from a libertarian perspective now for almost 8 years, speaking for the Mises Institute many times and speaking at many other liberty-minded organizations and writing books from this perspective. I think of all the libertarian candidates, I've done more to counter communism and Marxism than any of them. And yet they still try to smear me with this ex-communist label. But I try to point out that some of the greatest advocates for liberty and some of the greatest anti-communists have been former Marxists, actually.
And yeah, as someone from the former Soviet Union, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Good.
Doctor, on your campaign website, you say that you know that many Americans have similarly evolved and transformed. But how do you know that? Is there a reliable way to quantify or qualify the transformation and embrace of libertarian values? And by the way, what are these values?
Well, that's a great question. So, yeah, I think there's no polling on this, right? But we can see that there's a large, what we might call red pilling of people that's gone on across the board. And we see many defectors from the left and into other ranks. And I think that we can capture these defectors and bring them into the libertarian fold, because they will understand that, and I think I'm the one to do this, is I can show them the faultiness of their premises, how very flawed they are, and also what, in fact, true liberty consists of, and that is the right of property, first of all, in oneself, property in oneself, which is the first thing that's abrogated under communism. You lose the property in yourself because the state now tells you what you can and cannot do. And then you lose all other property rights. And property is the basis of liberty. And so I can show them that liberty, in fact, is actually something that they can't even speak about without using. So it's very easy to demonstrate that you cannot denounce the idea of liberty as the primary prima facie value for every human being, whether they know it or not, because you can't even make an argument without using liberty itself to make that argument, without belief in property rights over yourself. And you exercise that right every time you open your mouth or argue anything.
Doctor, also on your website, you say that two dominant parties, quote, do not care about you. They only care about increasing their size and power, end of quote. But, well, isn't it the point of politics in general and the goal of every political party under the sun? Growing in size, garnering as much support as possible, and securing the hold on power to turn your agenda into actual government policy, right? So isn't it exactly what you are trying to accomplish too?
No, not at all. Because, see, they want to grow the power of the state.
Okay.
And they are in their own ways different types of statists. And I would argue even different types of socialists, frankly. You have on the welfare side, you have the Democrats who are trying to grow the state using the welfare tactics. And you have also within the welfare status, you have the neocons even within the Democratic Party. And then you have on the right, the warfare socialists who are attempting to grow the size of the state and using this war as a means of redistributing wealth to the state through taxation and then appropriation of money that from the private sphere, from the private citizens into state coffers in order to conduct their wars. So both sides are communists in a way. They're both socialists. They're just different types. And they're very almost indistinguishable when it comes to foreign policy, for example. They have no light between them at all, except on very, very small matters, like whether to fund Ukraine more or not. But we see now that with the conflict in Israel, that they both want to send billions and billions of dollars to Israel and unlimited supply of arms. They want to open up the cache of arms that are stored in Israel without any qualification and without any criteria on what's used and how much. So this would be giving an unlimited pipeline to Israel to undertake its Gaza extravaganza.
Well, so, this is something clearly something that you do not support.
Not at all. I think I believe in non-interventionism. Absolutely no foreign aid to any countries, especially military aid, because this only exacerbates world tensions like it's doing in the Ukraine war, for example. I mean, we have seen hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians fed into the maw of death for nothing, because after all, what's going to end up happening is there's going to be a settlement in which Russia is effectively taking, retaining Crimea and assuming control over the Donbass region. So nothing happened there except the expenditure of billions of dollars and the loss of hundreds of thousands of lives. So I'm against that, and I'm principled here. The same stance applies to Israel. There's no special status for any country. So Israel should not be given arms, and the United States funds Israel to the tune of $3.8 billion of military aid every year. And now they want to give it another $14 billion plus unlimited supplies of armaments through this cache that they maintain in the state of Israel that's hidden somewhere. And they want to make that cache replenishable without any criteria being put on it. Not only what's used, but how and to what end. All of that is a blank check that's being written. This is destroying the United States' image across the world. It is creating enemies. It's increasing hostilities. It's exacerbating and escalating tensions and war. And the United States policy of its neocon policies over the last 30 years have been a total disaster. They have done nothing to help this country.
Freedom is the cure. You're dead on. This is the largest experiment performed on human beings in the history of the world.
The more you know.
What they're doing is they're forcing vaccination on people, and I believe they are killing people with this vaccination.
The freer you are.
It's murder. They are basically murdering people in hospitals.
The all-cause mortality, we know, is now higher in the vaccinated group than the unvaccinated group.
Stay informed on the issues that affect freedom.
Get a subscription to The New American today, thenewamerican.com.
But this is not something that we hear from the Biden administration and the Republicans even. Their logic here is that we need to support Ukraine because Europe will be next, and then it will be United States that will attack us. And then with Gaza and Israel, they say that we need to support Israel, well, not only because it's the only democracy in the Middle East, but because it will, if we don't support them, then it will embolden Hamas and Iran to attack, well, us in the end. So essentially what we're doing by supporting them, we actually somehow make us ourselves safer. What's your opinion of this rationale?
Mean, all of that is the absolute propaganda, the inverse of which is the truth. That is a total inversion of reality. And so by supporting Ukraine, we've actually risked the possibility of nuclear war, which would not be beneficial to anybody on Earth, at least of all U.S. citizens. In the case of Israel, we're also exacerbating tensions and possibly inciting a nuclear war or even some sort of World War III, bringing in, Iran and possibly Yemen. I'm not sorry, not Yemen, but like Syria and other related forces like Hezbollah into a battle, which would imbricate the United States in a war that's really not winnable from the U.S. standpoint. First of all, that'll only exacerbate tensions and it'll actually cause possible terrorism on our soil as blowback. So it is nothing. They're complete liars. Everything they're saying is the exact opposite of the truth.
Yeah, this is what Joe Biden said in one of his recent addresses. I believe it was not even a few weeks ago. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the economy, which is considered rated number one issue for voters. You, sir, boldly proposed to address it in part by abolishing income tax and slashing government spending. And the latest figures I could find show that in 2022, the federal government collected over $2.4 trillion in income taxes, which accounted for 52% of its total revenue. So with such a major source of revenue gone, the spending cuts must be rather major. And so you already mentioned that you'd get rid of all foreign aid and military assistance to other countries. What are other specific areas of government spending do you think should be cut and at what rate?
Well, I would go after the total elimination of many of the alphabet agencies, if not all of them, inclusive of the CIA, the FBI, and then I would go after the CDC. I would eliminate the ATF and you name it. I mean, the whole list. It's basically, look at what Javier Milei says with reference to Argentina. That's the same thing I would do. Slash, pull it off the wall. And so in that, the IRS, of course, too. And once you get rid of the income tax, you obviate the need for the IRS. Then you see that you don't have the money to fund these organizations, these agencies, and then you're forced to get rid of them. And they should be gotten rid of. They're totally oppressive in the cases of this, the FBI and the CIA. There's no basis for them. They are actually oppressors of the American people, and in the case of the CIA, of other countries. And they have done nothing but nefarious acts, the CIA, all around the world. The CIA is a criminal organization. It has undertaken some of the most outrageous criminal activities in the history of the world. So I think I would get rid of it immediately.
Would you elaborate on that, please?
Well, I mean, look what it's done in overthrowing the leaders, democratically elected leaders of countries, going back to 2014 in Ukraine, at which time they overthrew a democratically elected, not pro-Russian, but at least Russia-friendly leader in order to install an anti-Russian puppet. This is really the kind of things the CIA does. This then led to the conflict because what happened, they started bombing Donbass, the Donbass region, and these people were being bombed by their putatively their own country. And this started conflicts. Of course, there were militia that rose up to, you know, to oppose this. And then there were the Minsk agreements that were never kept by the Ukrainians. And so this is the kind of thing the CIA does. Now, on the domestic front, the CIA has conducted human experiments like MK Ultra, which took human beings and experimented on them with drugs and all kinds of torture and mind control technologies. They have also undertaken possibly having an involvement in the assassination of actual leaders of the country, including of JFK. Now, I don't think they were solely involved, but I think they were. And that's been coming out for years, but I think they're definitely a party to that particular thing. So you have the CIA involved in the murder of a U.S. president and a U.S. presidential candidate in the case of Robert F. Kennedy. So, I mean, this organization is a criminal organization. They were funded and started by a nefarious group who wanted to use it to surveil upon Americans and to interfere in the affairs of other countries, including deposing people that were elected or otherwise people that were put in power. I mean, they did it in Iran and imposed the Shah on Iran. And this led eventually to the Islamic fundamentalist uprising there. This is the kind of stuff we've done all over the world.
Yeah, talking about the alphabet agency, CIA included, you said FBI and TSA, among others, as reasonable as it sounds, Doctor, please consider the fact that you just mentioned yourself that our aggressive interventionist foreign policy over the past decades has created us numerous powerful enemies with very strong anti-American sentiments, and mm-hmm. our open border policies have allowed God knows who into the country. People on the terrorist watch list included. Mm-hmm. Are you not afraid that our enemies, geopolitical adversaries, would take advantage of your policies? I certainly despise the system, you know, that prioritizes safety over freedom. But at the same time, I'd like to see a reasonable balance between the two. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, listen, the United States will have a great deal of adjustments, and will pay a price for the interventionism that it's undertaken. And it would take a great deal of effort and time to reestablish goodwill with various parties. You don't just bomb Iraq. And, first of all, we armed Hussein to have war with Iran. And then when Hussein was no longer useful and became obstreperous or somebody's particular interests were at stake, we decided to bomb Iraq with no provocation and no evidence of any weapons of mass destruction. And so that created, first of all, hundreds of thousands of deaths, millions displaced, trillions in trillions spent in military efforts, military armaments and so forth, and deployment of troops. I mean, this is the kind of thing it takes a while to live down. Now, I wouldn't say the United States needs to go on an apology tour. What I'm trying to say is the United States needs to establish itself as a real beacon on the hill that is only interested in friendly relations and trade with other countries. And so it's a non-entanglement. This goes back to the original founding fathers' vision for this country, including Jefferson and others. So what I say is, yeah, it'll take time. I'm not saying we have no self-defense. In fact, I would take all of the troops that are positioned in over 900 bases around the world and bring them home and have them defend the country. Now, we probably wouldn't need all of them, but we still need to have self-defense rather than offense. I think our military is being used in an offensive way, whereas it should be a military defense. The Defense Department is really not a defense department. It's an offense department. So that has to change.
Yeah, that's an Orwellian thing, of course, defense, offense. Another bold proposal, sir, is auditing and potentially abolishing the Federal Reserve. How do you plan to maintain stability in the financial system without a central bank? And what safeguards would you put in place to prevent economic crisis?
Well, I think the Fed is causing all of the crises that we have. The economic crises, the boom and bust cycle, the inflation, the destabilization of the dollar, the deflation of the dollar. I think that they're effectively a counterfeiting organization. We need to end the monopoly over money by a single private bank. It's a private bank. This is very little known to many Americans that this is not part of the United States government, although they can have their way with the United States government. So what I would suggest is that this has to happen through the use of parallel currencies that people start to use in advance of getting rid of the Fed. We need a real marketplace, a free market in currencies. Like we have supposed to have a free market in everything else. Money is another commodity. This is what people fail to understand. It just happens to be the commodity, which is 50% of every transaction. And so likewise, the monopolization of money is an enormous power that the Fed holds. And this is totally outrageous. They're who knows what money they're making on loaning money created out of thin air and loaning it to the United States government at interest. I mean, if that doesn't strike people as utterly on insane, I don't know what will.
Well, it actually doesn't. Nobody really talks about that with few exceptions. How do you explain it?
What's that? How do I explain it?
How do you explain it? It doesn't seem to be a very popular position. Widely discussed.
Yes, it's not widely
understood. At least.
Yes, that's right. It's not widely understood. First of all, there's deception involved from the beginning. They call themselves the Federal Reserve, which gives the impression that they're part of the federal government, which mm-hmm. is false. So the first thing is this whole agency is founded on deception. Then people don't understand that they're actually the ones that are producing the money that is put into the supply for the United States. So this is just ridiculous that you have this private bank controlling the currency, the only currency of the United States. I explain it by virtue of the fact that people are just totally miseducated and uneducated, but propagandized to death. And they just haven't gotten a clear idea of what's going on, who's running this show and how. The Fed creates an unseen tax that people are paying on a regular basis by virtue of inflation, the deflating of our currency, which makes everything cost more. And so everybody's paying a tax thanks to the Fed's practices. So the Fed needs the Fed's monopoly. It's a monopoly over money. They're the only ones allowed to produce money. That has to be changed. We need to get rid of them. That would take a congressional act, but it's possible. And I would float such an act to Congress to get them to do it.
Dr. Rexenwald, you just said that the Federal Reserve is actually a private bank. You stressed it. Do you know who owns it?
That's a great question. That's one of the things an audit would actually find out. Who owns this bank? Who's got the controlling interest here? And I think it really is the Federal Reserve, the banks that are in the Federal Reserve network, those commercial banks, are partly the owners of the Federal Reserve. But then who owns those banks is another question. And, this gets into some pretty murky territory, which I will not go into right now for reasons of keeping myself alive.
Okay, maybe once you relax it, we'll talk about that. Doctor, one of the greatest points of your platform, I think, is the nullification of all unconstitutional federal laws and rules. But it's not clear what is preventing the states from utilizing the 10th Amendment right now. How do you plan to work with the states and localities to wake them up and remind them of their great power?
Yeah, first of all, the idea is that, we would try to encourage people to run for office at the state and local levels in order to wrest control of government from the central government and to vest it in the people at the state and local level. So it is necessary to get the right people into the state and local levels. We need libertarian-minded people, and this doesn't necessarily mean libertarians with a large L. They could be Republicans, they could be independents. It's very doubtful that they would be Democrats, since those are socialist, globalist pawns. But it's necessary to get the right people in that understand the idea of decentralization and nullification and are willing to act on it. That takes a process. That's why my campaign slogan, Wrecking the Regime, Wreck the Regime, which you see behind me here, is a process of getting a local power, as well as attempting to get this message out at the national level.
Again, this is something that was intended by the founding fathers and the U.S. Constitution. Doctor, one of the last questions that I have to you is that for the past couple of years, if not longer, you have dedicated your research and writing skills to the Great Reset of the World Economic Forum and the subverted globalist elites. Your latest book is titled The Great Reset and the Struggle for Liberty. But given the planetary scale of this agenda, the global entities would certainly need one of their own in the White House, or at a minimum, someone they could control. And in this regard, do you believe that there are risks of the elections being manipulated to achieve this goal?
Of course. I think they have been manipulated, and they'll probably be manipulated in the future. Mm-hmm. So we need a candidate that's not actually going to be likely having a real vested interest in this, being visible in order to point out what's going on, even if it doesn't benefit him. And I would be that person. In other words, I'm willing to blow the whistle on the electoral malfeasance that'll no doubt happen in the next election, like it did in 2020, even though it will not result in a victory for myself.
There are speculations and concerns that there might be crisis such as next pandemic or terrorist attacks on U.S. soil to maybe facilitate things that were used, last time, like mail-in ballots and, this kind of things, so like, all these shenanigans with electronic voting machines, etc. Do you see something like that being played out next year?
Yes, I think so. In fact, my colleague, Lori Price, pointed out to me, I think she said that it's going to either be another pandemic, a world war, or, a war in which we're definitely involved, or it could be a spate of terrorist attacks or a major terrorist attack, so-called. No, in other words, it's very possible that the establishment, the political elite, and whoever's running their activities may, in fact, engineer another crisis like this.
Is there anything people can do to preserve whatever is left of our election integrity?
Yeah, they need to, first of all, I think they need to focus not strictly on the national scale and look at how the government has to drive its agenda through into the fabric of society at the local and individual level. If there is no compliance to the globalist statist regime, then they have failed. So we need to establish ways to make ourselves immune and resistant to this agenda by virtue of creating our own parallel economic, social, and political structures that they can't control.
And Doctor, is there anything else that our viewers and listeners need to know about you to support your campaign?
Yes, I mean, I'm just say this, that I believe I will tell the truth no matter what it says. And I'm going to be the truth teller in this election, including on every issue. So and I would ask them to get involved, to follow me by coming to the website, wrecktheregime.com, R-E-C, theregime.com.
Is it the best way to stay updated on your campaign, Doctor? And is it the best source to learn more about you?
Yes, it is. And then, you know, to know more about my background and you know, books and all that is michaelrechtenwald.com. And of course, I'd ask people to follow me on Twitter at wrecktheregime.
Fantastic. That was Dr. Michael Rechtenwald, everyone. Thank you so much for watching and listening. I'm your host, Veronica Kirilenko.
The founders believed in being self-reliant. When you're dependent on others, you're easier to control. Stay strong. Take care of yourself and your family.
Get a copy of our latest collector's edition, Self-Reliance. Learn about the necessity of self-reliance for a free people and basic tips on how to get there. Never give up hope.